Yo, what up, everybody? Whoever's watching, who might not be watching, this is a lot earlier. We've never ever actually did a show this early before, but I'm on the East Coast, and we're about to get this started. This is going to be a real good one. This is something I really, really, really look forward to doing because, you know, there's a lot going on in Palestine, and I got one of the best guys I know to give us the lowdown about what is going on over there. But before we do that, I'm going to kick off to a video that my friend Amir Zahir just posted. And I think you guys will like this video. I'm about to hit it up right now. And let's kick back and watch this funny video. God damn it. Fuck, bro. I will never understand this fucking system. I have to sit. Sorry, guys. I think this is a tradition with my the episodes now. We just always have to have nonstop fucking problems. Let me see if I can do this right. Okay. Maybe. The thing is, I don't want... Jesus Christ. Well, there's Hammer.
Hello, boys and
fucking Lord. Guys, I am a fucking dickhead. For real. All right, I guess it's only going to work here.
Hello, boys and girls. This is Amir Zahir, and Amir Zahir, if you're white. Today, we are going to be learning a new word in Arabic. On Tuesday, President Joe Biden came to Dearborn, the capital of Arab America.
Mr. President, can I ask you a quick question on Israel before you drive?
No, you can't. Not unless you get in front of the car as I step on it. I'm only teasing.
So today's word is haiwan. Try it again. Haiwan. Haiwan literally means animal, but we Arabs also use it to mean jerk, douchebag, or asshole. There is a female version of the word as well. That's haiwana. The reporters laughed when the haiwan made this stupid joke. So the reporters are haiwanat. So let's review. Haiwan, haiwana, haiwanat. I hope you learned a lot today. And don't forget, free, free Palestine.
Yeah, buddy. Fuck yeah.
The United States fully supports Israel's right to defend itself.
Haiwan.
Hi, Wen. Okay, stop sharing. There you go. Boom. Amir Zahir in the house. What up, buddy?
What up, man?
This is freaking great, bro. I'm so glad to have you on this podcast, especially now. There's a lot to talk about. You are the commandant when it comes to Palestine in terms of anybody that I know. You took me to Palestine back in 2018 to do stand-up comedy. Really appreciate that. That was magical.
Well, we appreciate you, man. Everybody loved you, public Yemeni. Everybody loved you out there. And, you know, Palestinians and Yemenis just feel a close kinship anyway. But you did great in Palestine, bro.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate it, man. That was just, I still talk about it, man.
Yeah.
You know, that's why I think more and more people need to vacation, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, it's so easy for us to think certain things of certain places. And then every time I travel, to no matter where I go when I travel, I'm there. And I'm sure you're the same way. You have these preconceived notions of what these places are. And then you get there and you're like, I've been fucking duped.
Right.
This whole time, everyone's fucking lying to me.
That's what happens. It even happens in America. You know, as comedians, we travel all around the country and you say, you know, you grow up in a big city like Detroit or Philly or wherever, and then they tell you you're going to Nebraska. You're like, oh, my God. And then when you get there, it's just like Walmart, McDonald's. It's just like everywhere else, you know. So, you know, we always are surprised where we end up. But, you know, America, we're so isolated from the rest of the world, man. And I remember one time I was in Palestine and I was talking to a friend of mine in Ramallah and I asked him, what are you doing this week? He said, well, Monday I'm hanging out with my dad. Tuesday I'm going to have dinner with my family. Wednesday I'm flying to London. Friday I got something back here. And I was like, whoa, slow down. What do you mean? You're just flying to London and coming back? And then it hit me that part of the world, everything's really close.
Yeah.
Tel Aviv to London's like a 5-hour flight.
Yeah.
That's like us going to LA.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And but here's the thing. When you take that flight from Palestine to London, you go over like 25 or 30 cultures and languages.
Mm.
And like they all know each other exist.
Mm.
Here you can fly from like Florida to Alaska. It's like 11 hours and it's one language.
Yep.
And it's not even the best version of that language.
No.
And it's like, so we don't understand. The only thing we know is Mexicans. We don't really know anything else in this country.
Yeah, but everything below us is Mexico.
That's right. So, I mean, we don't. Right.
Everything's Mexico.
That's right. So we don't have this notion of being members of a global community.
Yeah.
You know, we know there's other people here and there's immigrants and stuff.
We're in a silo.
Yeah, totally, totally.
America's in a silo.
Yeah. And so, you know, this causes a lot of like lack of awareness about the world and stupidity. I mean, we have a game show called Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Then Nobody Wins, you know? So, I mean, like, we have a problem. You know, we have a problem.
We got a big fucking problem.
We got a problem. Listen, man, but there's...
And then now weed's legal. Whoa.
Yeah, well, does that mean... It might make it better.
I mean, I'm high right now.
I mean, look, there's been... If anyone wants to freak out about America, there's a statistic that I tell everybody if you want to forget that. There's been 250 episodes of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Okay.
Okay.
You understand the show. You go on the show. You answer questions from the first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade. If you answer all, you're an adult. And if you answer all the questions from the fifth grade correctly, do you know what you win on this show, Mike?
What?
$1 million for answering questions from the fifth grade correctly.
Okay.
Oh, and nobody wins.
Okay? Nobody?
No. Well, let me tell you the statistics.
Nobody won.
Let me tell you the statistics. Okay, that's an exaggeration. Let me tell you the statistics. 250 episodes of Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader?
Yeah.
Two winners in the history of the show. And who are these two people? Who are these two people? One of them was the superintendent of schools for the entire state of Georgia. So you already know the questions that are on the show. And the other one was a Nobel Prize winner in physics. All right? These are the two Americans capable of winning. Do you know who wins Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader in Korea? Like a plumber. Anybody. Anybody
they don't wins. Have that show there, probably.
Of course they don't have that show because too many people would win.
They would all bankrupt
right?
the whole system.
That's right. So, you know, in America, if you're smarter than a fifth grader, we give you $1 million. If Germany, you're smarter than a fifth grader, you go to the sixth grade. That's it. There's no fucking prize. We have a problem. And so it resurfaces every time sort of global political things happen, like this last episode with Palestine.
Yeah.
And you have to end up instead of in Europe where you can spend most of your time mobilizing people and getting them out in the streets, we have to spend most of our time educating people.
Yeah.
And re-educating them. Be like, well, didn't you hear about this before?
And re-reminding.
That's right. That's right. So I mean, but hey, you know, there's a lot of dollar trees and the internet's fast and there's a dollar menu. And so, you know, America's a great country. But we got some things to work out.
Yeah, we do. We do have a lot of fucking things to work out, bro. It's kind of sad, man. It really is. But you know what's not sad right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me just get something off my chest real quick. And mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I want to know if you agree with me.
Yeah.
Whether it's in America or it's just all fucking human beings. But what I see a trend of is this.
Mm-hmm.
People will only speak out to things that are wrong
mm-hmm.
if it's currently cool to talk about it.
That's right.
So like we have this like problem of like the only way you're going to get anybody to rally around a cause if it's quote unquote cool,
mm-hmm.
safe.
Mm-hmm.
Won't get me canceled,
mm-hmm.
will give me accolades.
Mm-hmm.
If I say this, people will like me more.
Mm-hmm.
If I say this thing and fight for this thing, more people will accept me and I'll get work and I'll be in this mm-hmm. inner circle and so on and so forth. For the longest time, you could not say shit about Palestine without people walking out of the fucking room.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these people, it's not that they don't want to talk about what's right or wrong. They feel like it's a, oh man, this is...
Right.
This is going to be a thing that's going to turn into something that I don't want to be a part of if it gets very negative.
Right.
I don't want to piss off Jews.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to piss off Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Yet at the same time, it's like, and I also feel that is a lot with Jewish people, especially Jewish Americans. For the longest time, Jewish Americans, even if they supported Palestine, they really couldn't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they did, then they would be ostracized. called a self-hating Jew or whatever the case may be. Do you want to speak to that about how everything is cool or like, or why do you think the shift has happened?
Well, I mean, first, your like assessment analysis is exactly right. And I've lived it throughout my comedy career. So I decided from the beginning, I was an activist in college anyway. And when I decided to pursue comedy as a profession, I decided, okay, I'm going to make Palestine sort of my brand and one of the things that I talk about, especially as a Palestinian. That meant that I would have a lot of doors. Well, and I realized later, a lot of doors closed to me. So, you know, I've headlined Carnegie Hall, I've headlined Kennedy Center, and comedy clubs won't book me. I mean, you know, this is the world that I live in, which I'm okay with, okay? But yes, there's a price to pay for talking about Palestine. We saw it with Mark Lamont Hill, who was a commentator on CNN, and then
Because I don't pay attention to too much.
Yeah, so Mark Lamont Hill is a black commentator on CNN. He was on CNN every day talking about, you know, Black Lives Matter, race issues, and all that kind of stuff. But he's also been a supporter of Palestine. So about, it was probably 3 years ago now, 2.5 years ago now, he was giving a speech at the UN, and he said, free Palestine from the river to the sea. And the next day, he was fired by CNN.
Next day.
By the way, Jeffrey Toobin. Remember Jeffrey Toobin on CNN? He's like a legal commentator on CNN. He showed his dick and masturbated on a Zoom call.
That's right.
And they had to have like 3 weeks of meetings before they decided whether to fire him.
Just
if you want to understand, if you want to understand the double standard,
yeah,
you know, this is what we're dealing with.
You know more about the media and the inner workings.
Yeah, I mean, Palestine has always been this thing that you can't touch. Now, things are changing. Things are changing, and it's the result of a lot of hard work of people over the years in entertainment, in the media, on campuses, that we've gotten to a point where people can feel more comfortable talking about it, and you're getting celebrities. So we already know the Hadids are Palestinian. So Bella is now being seen at pro-Palestine rallies very loudly talking about her heritage and
she's
her tradition.
She's half Palestinian, right?
Well, there's no such thing as half. You're if you're a little Palestinian, you're as Palestinian as everyone else. That's what I tell everybody.
That's fucked up, bro. How about white people? That's fucked up, man.
Well, she's white, too.
Why is it every time a white person has sex with a person of color, the white doesn't exist anymore?
Well, Barack Obama's black. He's not half white.
He's half white, bro.
I mean, white genetically.
And he bombed the fuck out of Yemen.
Yeah, he did. You know, he's an asshole, but I'm just saying he's black.
His name is Obama. He has bomb in his fucking name.
Yes, that's true. So John Legend tweeted Palestinian Lives Matter the other day. You have more people coming out.
Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen is criticizing Israel as a Jew. Mark Ruffalo has been on the pro-Palestine thing for a long time.
He's been there for a long time.
Yeah, and so things
He seems to be uncancelable.
Well,
there's certain people that are uncancelable.
I think if you play a superhero,
done.
Because now they have, you got to be in like 7 movies, so they can't cancel you.
They could get rid of you. Sometimes they do change the people.
They
midstream.
Do, but it's hard. So, I mean, but I'm sure he knew the prices that he might have to pay. Roger Waters, the head of Pink Floyd, he's been on the anti-Israel thing for a really, really, really long time. So, and now more people are picking up. I'd love to say DJ Khaled was one of our, but he's been a little quiet, man. So you have the other
he's
side of
it, too.
He's
always been quiet.
Yeah, you have the other side. I mean, I tweeted.
But then again, you know, do you really want him to talk about it? He sounds like he's really stupid.
He is
like
not.
Anytime he talks, I don't think he can really construct a full sentence.
I think that's true. But, you know, free Palestine, that'd be nice. You know, just a little tweet. You're Palestine. People expect it.
Somebody would have to say free Palestine, and he would be like, I like that.
Yeah, right.
I like that.
You know, I mean, I tweeted the other day that I said, sometimes I forget that DJ Khaled is Palestinian. But in all fairness, so does he. So, you know,
hilarious. That's funny.
So, you know, that's but he's like super famous, you know. So you know, we need those. But it is now. What's changed? What's changed is the work of activists for a long time has changed the view of Palestine as a sort of humanitarian issue. Oh, these people have it rough, so let's send them money every now and then. But we're not getting to the politics. For people now speaking of it as a political crisis. This is a crisis of apartheid, ethnic cleansing. You know, it's not we didn't have a tsunami. We didn't have an earthquake. We had a political movement that said, you get less rights because you're not Jews. You get kicked out of your house because you're not Jews. That's a political crisis. It has humanitarian implications.
Very much so.
But it's a political crisis with political solutions. Humanitarian crisis can be solved by money. Haiti has an earthquake. If you send them enough money, they can rebuild their country. But if there's a big force also sponsored by the largest government in the world that says, no, you don't get to rebuild your country because you're black. Well, that's a political problem. And right. that's what's happening in Palestine. Right. It's been happening. So that's changing, that people are seeing it now in that way.
Why are people seeing it that well, way all of a sudden? Do you think Black Lives Matter
yes,
and a bunch of this social stuff has happened?
Social media and Black Lives
Pandemic.
Matter.
Pandemic.
Yes, yes.
People actually get to sit down and listen yeah, for once.
I think all these things have to do with it. But definitely the Black Lives Matter movement. But remember, Black Lives Matter, we sometimes think of it as, oh, last summer Black Lives Matter really hit. And it did really hit last summer. But you and I are old enough to remember, and a lot of people are old enough to remember, the protest of 2012 after Trayvon Martin and 2014 after Michael Brown and Ferguson. There were protests. But what changed in 6 years? That it those people that started in 2012 and 2000, they didn't stop. They kept going and kept reminding you, and then it became, okay, yes, this is – so that's what's happened with Palestine. This is not – happening in a vacuum. It's like a soccer game, right? Everyone watches a soccer game and they go, man, this shit is so boring. And then there's 30 seconds of like high energy when they're about to score.
Yeah.
You know, but that 30 seconds was made possible by the 35 boring minutes when they were passing to each other and figuring out the strategy and say, okay, what am I going to do when I go over here?
Fucking great analogy.
And what am I going to do when that opportunity hits? That's why soccer players are so mad when they miss a shot, because those opportunities don't come around that long,
yeah.
that often. You know, so same thing here. All these things and finally coming together, and unfortunately with what Israel is doing, but you know, the ethnic cleansing that's been happening for 73 years. I tell people, this stuff that happened in Jerusalem that sort of set this all off. That's why this thing is not going anywhere. I don't care that there was a ceasefire yesterday. I mean, I care, of course. I don't want people to get killed anymore. But politically, that's not going to stop the momentum. They still haven't resolved the issue of whether or not these people are going to get ethnically cleansed from their houses. Today, there was a ceasefire yesterday. Today, Friday, was the largest demonstration yet inside the old city of Jerusalem after the ceasefire. And the police came in and broke it up in ways that they were breaking up black protests here in the 60s with skunk water and rubber-coated bullets
How
and all that kind of shit.
How degrading is the yeah. skunk water thing?
Look, Mike, you went to Palestine.
Yeah.
You saw – I whenever I take people to Palestine with me, I always make sure they go through a checkpoint. You went through checkpoints.
I made sure I went through.
Yes.
Remember, I got out of the car.
Yes, yes. You. I want
to
make sure.
I wanted to go through.
Yeah.
You know what my favorite part about it was?
You went with Hanny, right? You want to walk
I went
through
with
checkpoints.
Hanny. Yeah, so to explain everybody, yeah. I could have easily went in the car to go through the checkpoint, but one of our Palestinian friends didn't have the paperwork to be able to do that. So
to go through the checkpoint via car. So he has to go through it via foot.
He has to get out of the car right. and go through the checkpoint via foot. And I was like, he asked me, do you want to do it? I'm like, fuck yeah, I want to do it. Yeah. I want to experience what this is like. It's basically a dystopian version of the TSA.
Right.
Very dystopian. All this metal. You go through this like dark, dreary tunnel. The Israelis are behind this like metal sheltered with bulletproof glass right. and they're in their uniform in there. It's like you're going into the fucking Death Star. That's exactly what it feels like. But you know what was the funniest thing about doing that?
Mm-hmm.
We're standing in line and we're waiting. And then all you hear is the Israeli soldier talking through the speaker and I can't speak Arabic, so it's just like
it's fucking Arabic anyway.
And then people like fucking walk up and then I'm like, okay, this is my favorite part. Here we are, human beings. Trying to cross a border.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw this really cute cat just go from Palestine through the fucking, like, right. through the bars and into fucking Israel. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much nicer would it be to be a cat right now?
Yeah. You went through that checkpoint. You see the way that they treat us on a daily basis. Thousands of people got to go through there just to go to work and make their commute 3 hours longer than it should be. And you saw the way they point guns at us at checkpoints in the West Bank and the way they just treat people. It's like you said, it's like TSA, but imagine TSA was only for black people.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
That's
right?
exactly right. what it is. What if we had a TSA and it was only for fucking black people? That's such a fucking analogy right. that could resonate with a lot of right. Americans right now.
And so that dehumanization, that humiliation that happens to Palestinians every day, and it has been happening every day for 73 years, all throughout Palestine, anywhere you go, knowing that and seeing that and imagining that that happens to people every day, the only conclusion you could come to is that Palestinians must be the most peaceful people on planet Earth, because we got a right to blow that shit up every single day. We got a moral right to say this is fucking wrong.
I mean, look at the riots that happened, you know, over George Floyd.
Yeah. Yeah. I burned down. Everyone gets mad about burning down a CVS. Let's talk about why they're doing it.
Not to diminish George Floyd, but man, we're talking hundreds and thousands of Palestinians over 70 fucking years.
Yes.
Getting the George Floyd treatment.
Yeah. Get it. Well, and look, even for black people, it's been happening for generations here as well. And I think that's what happens with Black Lives Matter. You know, it's funny. I always say that when you talk to black people and you talk to Palestinians, something very weird happens that's similar and the same, which is we express a lot of emotions, frustration, anger, rage, sadness, but never, ever, ever shock. You never met a black person who was shocked that cops were killing black people.
Yeah.
And you're never going to meet a Palestinian that's shocked that the Israelis are treating us in this way. But we want to get it out there now. We have an opportunity. And I think this momentum is going to keep going. And we saw it here in Dearborn in the last week or so, right? Sunday, we had a rally in Dearborn for Palestine. 10,000 people came out. The next 48 hours later, we had a rally because the Haiwan Joe Biden was coming into town.
Haiwan.
And we had 3,000 people come out on Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m.
I'm trying to pull that picture up because you gave me that picture.
Yeah.
The
10,000 people rally. Yeah. While you're pulling that up, we called for a rally with like 5 days notice to get people to come together and support Palestinian rights here in Dearborn, the Arab American capital. But we're still only a city of 100,000 people. And 10,000 people came out. I mean, that's like 10% of the population decided to get off their ass. And that's a big number. And they came out and it was huge. And we basically shut down the main streets of the city for a few hours. And we let people hear our voice. And then on Tuesday, Biden was coming into town and we shut it down again. All in a very peaceful, nice, aggressive and loud, but peaceful. And let them know that we were here and that we weren't going anywhere. And that's not stopping. This weekend, there's going to be all kinds of protests throughout the United States. Tomorrow, there's one in Ann Arbor. Now, there's a national one planned for next Saturday in Washington, D.C. I have plans to do another really, really big one here in the Detroit metro area. Maybe we'll fill up like a baseball stadium.
Or something. This is the picture that Amr gave me.
Yeah, I mean, it was really massive solidarity.
What's Up Media Network? Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I mean, you'll see the sea of people is just unbelievable.
Did you see that picture of Yemen?
Yeah, Yemen. Yes.
Was it 25,000 people out?
It was way more than that. Just to show you what we got to deal with. So on Tuesday, we had 3,000 people. And then I read a story on Channel 7 News later in the day of a reporter who was there. And he writes, dozens of people marched against Joe Biden. There's another people that wrote about Sunday, hundreds of people, a few hundred people marched against Joe Biden. We had 10,000 people. We have to deal with this kind of bullshit in the media all the time. They never want to really say how many people are out there and doing it.
How is it so highly coordinated?
Well, because
how is this so highly coordinated that like you can get almost every journalist in the mainstream to spew those lies? Like these people know that they're spewing these lies, that they're diminishing the efforts and the impact.
Well, I think for a long time, look, social media has changed a lot of things where it's leveled the playing field. We Palestinians have always said if we could just get to a point where there wasn't a situation where everyone's playing football and they're all wearing helmets and we're not, you know, so if we could change that and we could just talk about the truth, we'd win. Okay. Now, social media levels a lot of that out because you don't need, you know, when we were growing up, there was three channels on TV and that's it. If you can control those three channels, you control everything. Well, now there's a million channels and the internet. Right. And so even if you control those three channels, other information can get out. So that's changed a lot. But the sort of traditional media of print newspapers and network TV still has huge pro-Israel Zionist influence in it. And there is still this feeling that there's a price to pay for criticizing Israel. And the truth is there is. But the playing field has been leveled. You have a lot more honest journalism. So we had a few honest journalists that said exactly how many people we had. And then we had to deal with this other stuff. Because, yes, there is still a feeling in the media that if you report in a way that's going to hurt the image of Israel, you might lose your job. You might get sat down. You might get disciplined. And this feeling sort of pervades into all of media and entertainment, right? I mean, it's taken a long time. Those are always going to be the last places you get impact as the media and entertainment. It's got to be in the streets first. It's got to be on campuses and young people in the streets first, and we achieve that. Now it's permeating in the media and Hollywood maybe a little bit, and then the last place it'll happen will be government. That'll be the last place it happens. But you see some people standing up in the government, some representatives and senators like Bernie Sanders, like Rashida Tlaib, like AOC, and a number of others. But still, a lot of them are being quiet. And they're going to be on the wrong side of history, man. You went there. You know that anyone who defends the way Israel acts is going to be on the wrong side of history. And all you need to do is see it with your own eyes once, and you understand sort of the severity of the situation.
Yeah, but do people really care about being on the wrong side of history? I think a lot of people just care about getting what they get while they're alive now.
Sure. There's no question about that.
The idea of being on the wrong side of history to some of these people, I don't really think they give a fuck. They give a fuck about what they can get right now.
Sure, you're exactly right. And so we have to make it, that's why it part of it is a moral argument, but part of it has to be a political argument. And when I say political argument, I mean, like, you got to make it cost them something to keep supporting Israel. You got to make it hurt to keep supporting Israel financially, politically. And that's why we have boycott campaigns. But what happens when you have a boycott campaign? They say you're anti-Semitic, you hate Jews. Come on, shut the fuck up, bro. I mean, this is one of the dumbest things. Like, are there anti-Semites who want to see Israel go down? Sure, because they're anti-Semites. But there's also like 99% of the movement that just looks at it and says, this is wrong, right? If you look at Saudi Arabia and you say what they're doing is wrong, doesn't mean you hate Muslims. And Saudi Arabia says we're the Muslim country and they got the Muslim sayings on their flag and everything. It doesn't mean you hate Muslims.
Exactly.
It just means these guys, what they're doing over here is wrong and it's oppressive. And the Israelis keep doing this like we came to a land without a people for people. That's a lie, man. We had a whole fucking civilization and they ethnically cleansed us and kicked us out. They moved into my grandmother's house. Literally. It's not a hyperbole. Literally moved into her house and they're still living there. And like, you know, that's why I made a video last summer called Echaduha Mafrushi, which means they took it fully furnished. You know how like you move into apartments fully furnished? That's what they did, except they don't pay us rent. And they moved into our country fully furnished. Their airport is the airport that you flew into before 1948. That was a Palestinian airport. Why do you think they have a fucking airport there? They didn't build an airport. Okay, they expanded on it, but that's where the runways were that we built. A lot of the places that we went to perform had been ethnically cleansed by Palestinians. We are from Palestinians. We went back in there and are reclaiming some of those places. But okay, you ever watch the show Homeland on Showtime?
Not really.
Okay, it's a show about the CIA chasing terrorists around the world.
Yes,
all right. So a few years ago, it was okay. A few years ago, it had good acting. Mandy Patinkin and Claire Danes were good. So a few years ago, I'm watching it, and they're chasing this fictitious Arab terrorist called Abu Nazir, and they're chasing him in Beirut. Okay, and it's like so authentic. I've been to Beirut. I'm like, man, this is amazing. So I thought to myself when the show was over, I'm like, man, I can't believe the Lebanese government let this American TV show about chasing Arab terrorists into Lebanon to film. That's crazy. The Lebanese government would never do that. So then there was like a behind the scenes of special right after the show aired, and the director came on and he said, well, this scene was set in Beirut, but of course we couldn't go to Beirut. So we actually filmed this scene in Haifa, Israel. Okay, Haifa used to be a fully Arab city. Haifa, Israel. And one of the reasons we like that city, it was a stand-in for Beirut, and it's on the Mediterranean. And one of the reasons we love this city is because it had the Arabic face to it. Well, I mean, what the fuck does that mean? That means this is an Arab city. Okay, you depopulated it and you replaced the people with Jews. They did that. But it means if you call up the Israeli Ministry of Film and you're like, dude, we need an Arab-looking city. They go, oh, yeah, we have a lot of those. You know, you need a brochure. You want on the water. You want in the desert. What do you have? We have a lot of those. Because they took our fucking country as it was. You know, they didn't come to a desert and just make it bloom like they always say. It's all bullshit. That's the messaging that's finally getting through. And people are finally using words like occupation instead of conflict. The words are so important. It's not a conflict. Was apartheid a conflict? It's not a conflict. It's an occupation. It is apartheid. It's not evictions like they're saying in Jerusalem. An eviction is when you don't pay your rent. An eviction is when you fuck up the property and the landlord says you got to go. These people are getting kicked out because they're the wrong religion to be replaced by someone who's the right religion. That's called ethnic cleansing. We have a name for that. It's called Jim Crow. So it's important to use the right words. And finally, people are doing that and it's catching on. And I'm really optimistic. I mean, I have this energy because I'm really, really optimistic about the way things are going. But it also means we got to keep our foot on the gas and not stop.
That's amazing, bro. That's an amazing speech.
And I'm really
happy
that you went to Palestine and you can speak firsthand,
bro,
to these things.
I've wanted to go to Palestine for so long. I mean, like what person from the Middle East doesn't exist. Yeah. What person
from the Arab
what
world?
Person from the Arab world, you know, does not want to witness and go to Palestine? It was also beautiful to see the Church of Nativity,
the Dome of the Rock. You saw all those things.
It was fucking amazing. I just want to ask you one question,
sure,
real quick. Anti-Semite.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
On my last podcast, I had a solo podcast, and I went off on the term anti-Semite, and I spoke to my opinions, how I believe that it's such a loaded thing. It's a weaponized term.
That's right.
It's a term weaponized to guilt white people into shutting the fuck up about the fact that Palestinians are paying for the Holocaust.
Right.
Right. Because, like, in the end, anyone who's logical is going to be like, all right, so Germany did the Holocaust.
Right.
Why are Palestinians getting it up the ass?
Right.
Right. And I think those questions were culled by this term anti-Semite. I think white liberals, white people in general in this country have always been worried about how they were going to be perceived.
That's right.
Especially racially. And I think those that changed the way our culture views Jewish people and Arab people have somehow changed the way we look at the truth. And instead, they used anti-Semite to make you go, okay, maybe I shouldn't talk about this ever.
Right.
Or if somebody talks about it in the room, I should just leave.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I cannot stand the term anti-Semite. What's a Semite?
Right.
Can you explain to us what a Semite is? I had to look it up. It was probably bullshit that I fucking saw.
Right.
Explain to me what a Semite is.
Well, I mean, the truth is there's no, okay. So Semitic is a term we use academic. So just so people know, I have a master's degree in Middle East and Islamic studies. So I studied this stuff. And so the term Semitic is mostly used as a linguistic term that describes languages. There are Semitic languages. So Hebrew and Arabic are Semitic languages. For instance, Aramaic. They come from the Semitic. So there's never really...
Even when I was reading the Horn of Africa, like the certain parts of the Mediterranean.
Yeah, the languages went all the... But so we've never really thought in history the way you might call people like Babylonians or Mesopotamians or Hebrews or Philistines or Greeks or Romans or Byzantines, that you would also call people Semites. It's kind of like a new last 100 years. And so it was coined by Jewish activists to describe anti-Jewishness. Now, so if there was something called a Semite, Arabs would probably have to be Semites too. Okay. So, but also it's a made up word, kind of. Okay. It's a political word. And you know what? Words mean what they mean, what they come to mean. So for instance, Islamophobia, the word phobia means fear. Now, people who are Islamophobic, are we saying they fear Muslims? No, we're saying they hate Muslims and they're discriminatory against Muslims. But we use the term and, you know, these are just terms we use. So I'm totally okay accepting that the term anti-Semite just means anti-Jewish and okay, just what it means. And
you're okay with that.
It's not a great term.
To me, I don't like it because it makes me go, fucking Arabs are Semites too.
Right. No, I mean,
and the fact that we're allowing that word to be used in a way to just shut up the conversation.
Yeah. The only reason.
So is anti-Semite also anti-Arab?
Right. I mean, if you were going to define the term strictly, then it would have to be. But here's the problem. If someone says to you, you're anti-Semitic. And you say, well, no, I'm not anti-Semitic. You're an Arab. And you say, I'm not anti-Semitic because I'm a Semite. And they go, okay, you're anti-Jewish. What are you going to say? Oh, you put it that way. Yeah, I am. No, you're not going to say that, right? You're still going to
say I'm not. No, I'm not anti-Jewish either.
Right. So, I mean, that's really
say
what they
anti-Jewish.
Mean.
Say anti-Jewish.
Yeah.
Say anti-Jewish.
Well, look, anti-Semitic has been used. But even if they used the word anti-Jewish a long time ago, the point is they're weaponizing it to curb and kill criticism of Israel. They're weaponizing it in a way to say Israel equals Judaism. But by the way, a lot of them, if you say to them Israel equals Judaism, they'll say that's anti-Semitic too. It's anti-Semitic to say a country equals a religion, and that probably would be anti-Semitic. But then they want to weaponize it and say, no, it does equal religion because when you criticize Israel, it means you're criticizing Jews. But wait a second. First of all, there's now rising numbers. We've seen them now. Hundreds of thousands of Jews in America who are anti-Zionist, anti the state of Israel, okay? For political reasons, some even for religious reasons. So they can't be anti-Jewish, right? I mean, maybe you want to call them a self-hating Jew if you want, whatever. But yes, they weaponize the term, especially in light of the Holocaust. And this is why they have to come up with myths. I mean, sometimes I'm debating sometimes with these people, and I got to stop. But sometimes I'm debating with these people, these Zionists, and they'll say, well, you know, the Mufti, the sort of religious leader of Jerusalem in the 30s, went and had a meeting with Hitler. Okay, I had a meeting with Hitler. Yeah, okay. Do you think Hitler looked at the Mufti of Jerusalem and say, hey, man, you know, I got this idea about killing all the Jews. Can I just get your approval? You know, I mean, that's what they want us to believe, you know, that we, because they have to make up this lie that connects us some way to the Holocaust to justify. Otherwise, it's just a white racist European colonial movement, which is. That's what it is.
That's exactly right. What it is. Right.
That's what it is. So they have to come up with, listen, man, I always say being a Zionist must be the hardest shit in the world. You got to remember all these lies. They train them. You got to remember all these lies. You got to not fuck it up. You got to really like, and you got to know the real history so you know how to lie about it, right? You got to, you know, this is why Arabs and Palestinians, when we talk about, this is why we're not very organized politically. Because when you say to a Palestinian, we got to get organized politically, they go, but why? We're right. You know, we're right.
That's
why
would, Arab ego. Yeah,
why would we have to spend all this time getting, we're right. And you know what? We are right. But that doesn't mean we don't have to organize politically, right? Yeah. You know, but this is what happens. So, I mean, but that's why it's so important that you as a voice, as an Arab American comedian and entertainment personality, that you went there, that you can speak about these things with, it's not just an emotional cultural issue to you anymore. It's a firsthand, you have firsthand knowledge and you are a witness. If you remember, when we went there, we did shows in Ramallah, Bethlehem, and Jerusalem.
Oh, it was so awesome.
But if you look at a map, these places are all like 10 kilometers from each other.
Yeah.
Why are we doing these three shows in these three locations? Why? It's like if you said here in Michigan, you said, I'm going to do a show in Dearborn. I'm going to do a show in Dearborn Heights. And I'm going to do a show in Westland. And you would be like, why are you doing three? You know, all the people in Westland can come to Dearborn, right? Okay. Yes, they can in America. But why were we doing those three shows right next to each other?
Because of the checkpoints.
The checkpoint. The people in Ramallah can't go to Jerusalem. The people in Jerusalem don't want to spend all that time going to Ramallah. Bethlehem is on the other side of Jerusalem, and the people in Bethlehem can't come to Jerusalem, so we go to them to do a show. But if there was no borders, it's like a 20-minute drive from Ramallah through Jerusalem to Bethlehem.
It is.
So the craziness, the alternate universe-ness of the situation made us do three different shows in three nights in three cities that are literally a 10-minute drive away from each other, but because of politics and racism and checkpoints, we did shows in all those different places. That's the craziness that is actually gets illustrated in the festival that we do.
I'm going to share some pictures while you're talking about this.
So, I mean, and then you see the people. I mean, Mike, you saw the people. I mean, they're just, you know, it's, I don't want to say cliche that, you know, everyone just wants to live a normal life, but the resilience, man. I mean, these people deal with this kind of shit every single day.
Mike Ishmael.
Yeah.
Who's the comic that's in this picture right now? It was a picture of all of us in Bethlehem.
Yeah.
Doing a show in Bethlehem. Look at all these people that came out. There were also Israelis that were at the show.
There are a few.
There's a few Israelis.
A few anti-Zionist Jews. Yeah.
One of the comedians was an anti-Zionist
Jew. Yeah, Noam.
Yep. Noam. Yep. She was great. And to me, I've always known that existed, right?
What, anti-Zionist Jews?
Yes.
Yeah.
But to experience it, how casual that was. Right. How we went to Bethlehem, and here's this Israeli girl who's Jewish, you know.
Right, and was she stoned and pulled down from the stage by Palestinians?
No.
No.
Very well accepted. Absolutely.
Right.
Remember, we were even thinking about, but she was great. It was fun. It was amazing. Let me just show some more pictures. Yeah. But Mike Ishmael said something that was really, really poignant. He goes, Mike, look around. Mm-hmm. For an occupied people, they sure don't live like it. Yeah. Meaning like just the resilience.
That's right.
In how much. So this picture right here is us going through that checkpoint that I was talking about earlier, that dystopian checkpoint for anybody who's just coming.
Yeah, that's called Columbia Checkpoint, the one you went through between Ramallah and Jerusalem.
So if anybody wants to know, this is that checkpoint that we went through. I didn't have to. I could have easily went across in a car. But myself and Mike Ishmael came down with, and Jennifer Jaja came down to experience what it's like for our friend Hanny to go through that checkpoint. And earlier I made a point about how it was really hard for all of us to go through it, but I saw a cat walk from Palestine into fucking...
That's right, into Jerusalem.
Into Jerusalem, yeah. and it was really funny.
Yeah.
Here's another picture of one of the shows with all the people in the background. The wall, the art on the wall.
Yeah.
This one here is a beautiful spray painted picture of Trump. And it looks like it's taken from when he was signing one of the things into law. But then the thing says, "Dear Slim, I wrote you, but you still ain't calling. I left the cell, my pager, and the White House phone at the bottom."
I mean, but Palestinians are imaginative, man.
Yeah, really. And then the best part is somebody else came in and did a sloppy picture of a dick on his chin.
Yeah, man. I mean, to talk about the wall, the Israelis build a wall. I mean, when you see it with your own eyes, is the only way to believe it. And they build a wall into Palestinian neighborhoods. If you remember in Bethlehem, we went to where the wall wraps around a whole house. We went to where the wall wraps around somebody's house, all three sides of their house. I mean, it's land grabbing.
Wait. Say that again.
There's right on the other side. So when you go into Ramallah into Jerusalem, there's a checkpoint. Then when you want to go from Jerusalem into Bethlehem, there's another checkpoint. Once you pass that checkpoint, you're crossing through the wall. Both times you're crossing through the wall. And there, right after you get into Bethlehem, when we were looking at the wall where a lot of the graffiti is, there is a part of Bethlehem that there's a house there. And the wall goes around all three sides of this person's house, which their house used to look like out over the mountains. It was beautiful. Now the wall is on all three sides of their house. Okay? And this is what they do.
Fucking crazy.
We're not human beings to them, man. This is what they do. And here's the beauty of it, though. They do all this stuff and the ethnic cleansing they've been trying in Jerusalem lately and just all the shit they've been doing us for 73 years to try to get us to leave. That's the whole point. I mean, they want our land. They want the land without the people. They're trying to get us to leave. And, you know, it hasn't worked. We've been too stubborn for them. They have this old saying about us where they said their first founder, Ben Gurion, said, "Let's kick out the Arabs and the old will die and the young will forget." Well, you know, it's not working out. It is really not working out that way at all.
That's so sinister.
Yeah, and it's one of their most famous quotes. The old will die and the young will forget. And there's still old ones walking around telling the story. And you'll find Palestinian kids in America that are 3, 4, 5 years old that tell you the name of the village their grandparents got kicked out of. So it is not working out for the Zionists. That's one of the reasons that we've been so successful in the past few weeks. And we're going to stay successful in keeping Palestine alive in the streets of America as long as we have to.
Yeah, I'm just cycling through some of these pictures. Oh, this is the best. Right now, I'm showing everybody. This is the thing that I want people to fucking just travel, man. It really like blows your mind away. Okay? I went to Palestine. I fucked up and I didn't bring my weed.
Why? I don't think you would have been able to bring it, but yeah.
There's ways. Israeli checkpoint or not, because I promise you, there's ways. So I forgot. And then I was like, fuck. So like we didn't have any weed. And I was like really, really fucking mad. And then I was thinking to myself, I was like, bro, there's no way we're going to get weed out here.
Oh, yeah. No, there is. Yeah.
And then after the show, this guy picks us up. Uh-huh. This guy comes to the show. And he was really cool.
Yeah.
He's like, "Hey, Mo, I fucking love the show. You guys were amazing. Are you enjoying your time here?" That's what every Palestinian wants to know. Are you enjoying your time here? They really care.
That's right.
That Arab hospitality.
That's a very Arab thing.
It's a very Arab thing. I hope you're enjoying your time here.
Yeah.
Whatever you need, let me know.
Right.
Is what he tells me. As soon as he said that, everything went in slow motion. Ding, 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 ding. I was like, "Do you have weed?" And he was like, "Bro, I got you." He tells us, remember we was at that one cool restaurant that you had to go downstairs, such a beautiful restaurant where it was like outdoors.
Yeah, snow bar. Yeah.
I don't know why they call it snow bar, because there's like no snow in Palestine. But it's such a beautiful outdoor bar.
Yes.
That's the thing, man. You go to Palestine, you think you're not going to see. No, man. The nightlife there is fun.
It's the nicest occupation in the world.
Yeah, right.
You just got to remember, all those people can't leave.
Yeah.
But it's very nice.
Yeah.
But all those people can't leave.
Yeah. Everyone's stylish. Everyone's living life, man.
For sure,
in your dumb American mind, you're like, oh, they ain't got, you know.
Yeah, nothing wrong.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Not nothing wrong in your mind. It's like they don't have a life. They probably.
Oh, you mean before you go there? Yeah.
Before you go there, you're probably like, oh, it's going to suck, you know, whatever. And then this guy tells me, he goes, "Hey, bro," he goes, "I don't want to go in there. I don't want anybody to know who I am." He goes, "So meet me outside."
Okay.
And I'll pull up and I'll text you. I was like, okay. So then I got other couple of people who wanted to like smoke weed. I rallied the freaking troops. This guy pulls up in a drift racing car. Mm-hmm. So if anybody doesn't know, in Palestine, drift racing is very, very like popular. And a lot of it is because drift racing can be done in a parking lot. You don't right. need a long track because right. it's not about who can win. It's about one car doing obstacles. And sometimes it's you go to a cone and then you're supposed to make the car do a 360 around the cone.
Right.
And then they grade you on your. It's kind of like car ballet, right? It's like ballet for cars. But it's he pulls up in a car like that, boombox playing electronic music, and we get in there and he pulls out this fucking cannon of a blunt. Fucking cannon. I was just, it's so Arab in every fucking way.
Right.
Arabs want to like
overdo it.
Like if they're going to make you happy, they'll make you even more happy. Yeah.
The lemonade is too sweet. The meat is too much. And yeah. The blunt is too big.
It's too big. And then he apologized. He goes, I wish I could have made it bigger right. because it's all the weed that I had. I was like, what? And then this guy took us in his car smoking, and we had to hotbox it because we can't be driving around in a car right. and pouncing with weed smoke coming out of it.
Yeah.
And so we had to hotbox it in this thing, in this drift car, and he's fucking showing off with the move. So like we're smoking, and it's just like, he's like doing, takes us around like the Nelson Mandela statue right. and like did 360s around right. it, trying to show. So basically he drifted us
right
all around Ramallah.
Right.
A tour,
right?
A very aggressive. I want you to have a good time.
That's right.
Tour.
That's right. You're not going to forget it.
And then he was like, "Hey, what else do you want?" And I was just like, "Man, I could go for ice cream right now." I got you, bro.
Yeah, man.
And then we found this party store that was just about to close.
Right.
And then we found the ice cream. I was like, "This guy is the fucking shit, bro." And then he'd like hit me on WhatsApp every once in a while, you know. Fuck. Anyways.
No, man. I mean, they're still Arabs. We're still Arabs. And in some way, you know, the situation makes people want to be even more sort of show that overcompensate. No, man, yes, it's tough here. Yes, we live under occupation. It's a weird political alternate universe. But we still can be generous and whatever. And you got to love that. You got to love that level of resiliency. But at the same time, it is an alternate universe. Like here, let me do a experiment that I made a video about once, but let me do an experiment and show it to you just so you understand how crazy Palestine is. Okay, let's see if Siri works. Siri, what time is it in New York City?
In New York, New York, it's 3:57 p.m.
Okay. Siri, what time is it in Nairobi, Kenya?
It's 10:57 p.m. in Nairobi, Kenya.
Okay, let's try a couple more. Siri, what time is it in Manila, Philippines?
In Manila, the Philippines, it's 3:57 a.m.
Okay, good. Siri, what time is it in Ramallah, Palestine?
Sorry, I don't know what time it is in Ramallah.
Siri, what time is it in Gaza?
Very populated. Sorry, I don't know what time it is in Gaza.
This is what we deal with. Invisibility. We're not on the map. We're stateless. We don't exist. If you go to Google Maps and you zoom into a small Israeli settlement or city anywhere, you'll find what you expect to see. Street names and names of buildings and names of businesses. If you zoom into Gaza, which has 2 million people, the most densely populated place on planet Earth, but because the Israelis don't let anyone in or out because of a blockade, you zoom in, you zoom in, you zoom in, no street names. A business here and there, but no street names, no addresses. We are invisible. We're not on the map. Literally, we don't exist. That's the alternate universe.
Talk about alternate universe. Yeah. What the fuck? You just blew my mind right now, bro.
That is the problem.
Fuck.
The problem is not, and I always try to tell, again, like I said before, it's not a humanitarian crisis. You saw the people there. They got money. They can go out. They can have fun. They can go to a comedy show. But they live in a place that literally doesn't exist to Apple. You know, Apple's supposed to know everything, right? Literally doesn't exist to Apple. So that kind of thing is what makes Palestine different. This invisibility of 5 million people who are stateless and can't vote for the government that rules them. We have a name for that. It's called apartheid. We have a name for that. There's literally Jewish roads and Arab roads in the West Bank.
How about the Jewish highways?
Yes, that's what I'm talking
Jewish
about.
Jewish only highways. I was talking about on the last podcast.
Exactly.
And I go, guess where those Jewish highways take you to?
Right.
It safely takes you
right.
over Palestinian land
That's right.
to your home That's that you right. stole in Palestinian That's right. land.
Oh, we have a name for that. It's called apartheid. We, exactly. we have names for those.
No. We have to explain it. Bro.
I know. But
you can't say apartheid to these people because then That's they're right. going to be like anti-Semite.
That's right.
You can't fucking win. That's Everything right. you do makes you an anti-Semite. Right.
I mean, that's the what makes... That's why I said before, it's not a humanitarian crisis. It's a political crisis with humanitarian implications. Sometimes those humanitarian implications look like other humanitarian crises, like people are poor or hungry. But really, it's a humanitarian crisis that we don't see often, which is, I can't leave... Yes, I have money and I have food and everything's here for me and it's fine, but I'm not allowed out. That's the crisis, you know? So those kinds of things are what define Palestine in the way it is. So we have to just keep talking about it in that way, you know?
Keep talking, Amir. You can. I have to just fix this light issue.
Yeah, no problem. So, you know, that's what we try to tell people about Palestine is that it is unique in that way. Yeah. It is unique in that way where people are invisible, right? Not seen politically by the rest of the world. So you have 5 million who don't have a passport. They literally don't have a passport. We can go see them. It's like a prison. You can go in and you can go see them. Remember Johnny Cash used to like go perform in prisons and stuff? Like, yeah, you can go in and you can see them. But guess what? They can't leave. And they might be dressed nice and they might have nice restaurants and that kind of stuff. But it is really, really alternate universe type stuff. And so that kind of... that the nature of the Palestinian condition is that where they cannot live a normal life. Do you know that you cannot mail something to somebody in Palestine? I mean, there's no Amazon. They can't order shit off Amazon. They have to order it to some locker in Jerusalem, and then maybe one of their friends is able to go to Jerusalem and bring it to them. I mean, you literally can't order shit off the internet. This is what we're talking about. I mean, that kind of you can. I don't care. I'm not to shit on any other place in the world. But if you lived in like Burkina Faso, you can mail something there. There's an address. Okay, it's not a country, but you can.
What the fuck is where's that, bro?
I think it's in Africa.
How do you pronounce that?
Burkina Faso. Are you looking it up?
Burkina.
B-U-R-K-I-N-A Faso. F-A-S-O.
Burkina Faso.
I mean, it's in Africa, I think.
Bro, you know, I like that. It sounds like the name of a hitman.
Yeah.
Burkina Faso.
Yeah. Like a character on Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Burkina Faso killed the mountain.
Yeah, exactly. He killed the mountain. Yeah, exactly.
But it's in Africa, right?
Are you the mountain could only be killed by Burkina Faso.
Anyway, there's a
hold on,
there.
Hold on. I'll please this real quick.
B-U-R-K-I-N-A.
B-U-R.
K. It should auto-complete. B-U-R-K-I-N-A.
There it is. Burkina Faso.
Was it a country or a city? I forget. I think it's a country.
Burkina Faso is a country.
Is it in Africa?
In West Africa.
Okay, good. There we go. All right. I was right. So.
Wow.
Okay.
Burkina Faso, cuz. I'm going to start telling that to girls. Like when they meet
me. Where
are you from? I'm like, I know I am. That's who I am. Yeah. My name. Burkina Faso.
Burkina, where are you from? Yemen.
Yeah, exactly. That's hilarious. Exactly.
So.
Oh, that's
I mean,
it.
But every place.
Burkina
in the world,
Faso. Sorry, man.
Every place in the world has an address.
Right.
You literally can't mail shit to people in Ramallah. I mean, this is the alternate universe stuff that occupation creates.
Yeah,
that's what we're talking about when we talk about Palestine.
Fucking bro, this podcast is amazing already, man. Yeah. I knew you, Amir. You're the shit, bro.
No, I appreciate you.
I appreciate you, man. Especially as like you know an Arab. I think a lot of Arabs, we grew up really frustrated being the bad guy.
That's right.
In every fucking thing, you know?
Yeah.
And for so long, I think a lot of us that had an inkling to want to be in entertainment really wanted people we wanted to see more of our voice to be out there.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, you're a good voice to be out there because you're educated, you're dedicated, you're funny. You know, and you're fair, you're not racist, you acknowledge the plight of Jewish people,
of course.
You acknowledge that we want good things for Jewish people too. Like for us to coexist,
of course.
It's not we want to like, you know.
I've always said the solution in Palestine, the political solution is gonna be no more West Bank, no more Gaza. No more borders or checkpoints. You open up the whole thing and everybody gets treated the same regardless of their religion under the law. Does that sound crazy? I mean, that's what
we need.
But
don't you think the Palestinians should get their homes back, bro?
Well, I agree.
Don't you think we should go back to the 67 borders?
No, the 67 borders would also entrench. In 1948, a million people were kicked out, a lot of them into the 67 borders, like my parents. No, there should be one state, not two states. There should be one state, and Palestinians who live in refugee camps in Jordan and Syria and Lebanon should be allowed to return. And the Israelis always say, oh, we don't have space. They seem to find space to build settlements whenever they need to build a settlement. They seem to find space to always say to all the Jews in the world, come here, we'll find room for you. But when Palestinians are actually from there, here's the thing, Mike. Remember Sheldon Adelson? Motherfucker, Sheldon Adelson? Yeah, it was that Las Vegas casino guy that used to give a lot of money to the Republicans. Anyway, he died like a year ago. He's like late 80s, he died. He's Jewish. He died. He lived in Las Vegas. He was born in Boston. No connection to Palestine or Israel ever. But since he was Jewish, when he died, well, he was able to get Israeli citizenship earlier in his life. And when he died, he was buried outside of Tel Aviv on some land that he owned. So he was buried in the land of Israel. I have four grandparents. They were all born in Palestine. And they were ethnically cleansed from their homeland. And they were buried in Delaware, Jordan, and California. And not because they wanted to be, but because they could never go back to their homeland. That's the ridiculousness of the situation that we talk about when we talk about Palestine. That sort of racism, apartheid, double standard, ethnic cleansing, and we have to use those words, is what we're talking about when we talk about Palestine. And so that is the stuff that's finally sort of breaking through to people, the ridiculousness of that, that has been shielded from the American public for so long because of like AIPAC and the media and government who has been being paid off. You know, AIPAC, the pro-Israel lobbying organization, has a $100 million annual budget, $100 million a year to send lobbyists to go tell Congress people what they want them to do, and to tell them, if you don't do this, then we're going to go spend money against your opponents. And they do. So, I mean, but now things are radically changing, and there is a real significant moment, and it needs people to speak up who have a voice. I always tell people, you know, yes, I'm going to be a voice, but everyone is very important to like a circle of people in their life. So you need to have a voice. Everyone needs to have a voice. I'm so proud of the people who are speaking up, especially Arab Americans, because we need to lead the way. You know, if we don't lead the way, no one's going to come and show solidarity with us, right? We need to lead the way. So I'm proud of people like you. I'm proud of Rami, who said something the other day on Instagram. Rami came to Palestine with me in 2015 for our first festival. He saw that. I'm proud of him. I'm proud of the Hadid family, man. They've been doing amazing things. You know, I'm going to forget a lot of people, but there's so French Montana came out and said, French Montana's Moroccan. He's Arab. He came out and said,
oh, no shit.
Yeah. He came out and said, free Palestine, you know? And you know, I'm so proud of all these people, and we need more of them to come out and do stuff and say stuff. But it's working. And here's the most important thing. It's working.
I mean, I posted a kind of controversial video off of TikTok. It got banned off of TikTok. And then I ended
up reposted it? You mean it's not your video?
It's my video.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I don't know if you saw it. It's like it just goes to music, and then basically it's just it's basically how Palestinians protect their land.
Oh, okay.
And then it's just like, it's very like TikTok, you know, I'm like dressed like, sure. I got the cafeya on and whatever. And then I'm showing rocks, right? Yeah. It says rocks, guns, right? And I say no military, no tanks, no airplanes.
Right.
Right. And then it just cuts to Israel laughing.
Right.
I dress as like an Israeli guy, right? Yeah. And then I cut as like a MAGA guy. He's laughing. American taxpayer.
Right.
And then the Israeli guy's, can I get $4 billion?
Right.
American taxpayer's like, sure, fuck healthcare. Yeah. You know what I mean? And then it just cuts to like, I took footage from the rock of a missile just going,
wow.
And then like, and then it blows me up.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. So
why'd they ban it? Did they tell you why?
I said it went against community guidelines. I think it's, when I looked at the community guidelines, it looks like TikTok wants everything safe. They don't like guns, missiles,
also violence,
right, okay. People getting killed or whatever, even if it's just within the context of what it is.
Parody, yeah.
So I posted it instead also on my Instagram. Out of all the reels that I posted, it's only a 30-second video. Yeah. It's got the most likes that I've had, right?
Exactly.
Most views, I mean. And it was interesting because I've posted Palestine stuff in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And I would notice that there would be people in Hollywood that you would see right away. So I would do these tests, right? So I have entertainment liberal friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have conservative motherfucking Marine buddies.
Right.
Because I was, you know. Marines, yeah. So sometimes I can do like a social experiment to figure out how things are happening. And it's really funny because I lean, listen, Sometimes I'm leaning conservative. Sometimes I'm leaning liberal. Sometimes I'm leaning in the middle, whatever.
Right.
And I'll post something about Palestine, and it's very interesting. You'll do that, and then you will see liberals liking it, mostly. Very quiet from the Republicans, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing like if I post something about guns, right?
Right.
It's just the exact opposite.
Right.
Whereas right now, I'm starting to see more of a blurred lines of likes and stuff. Yeah. Not only that, I'm starting to see more likes from people who are working in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, so they're just like, wow, that was...
Well, you're starting to see the sort of... finally, people seeing Palestine, the universality of it, people seeing it as a universal human rights issue. We're going the same way that it went in apartheid in the late 80s and early 90s, that people started to just finally wake up and they kind of knew this was going on, but now they're hearing the voices of the people. And social media now is playing such an important role. I mean, nobody would have known about these ethnic cleansing evictions happening in Jerusalem last month if it wasn't for social media and all the hashtags. I mean, so... And this is the hard work of Palestinians on the ground, hard work of Palestinians, Americans, and Arab Americans, because Palestine is not, you know, Palestinians need to lead the way because we're the direct victims, but it really is an Arab issue for all Arabs. I mean, I especially know my Yemeni brothers and sisters, man, when I walk up to them and say, not just my Yemeni brothers and sisters, my Lebanese brothers and sisters, in Dearborn, it's mostly Lebanese, Yemeni, Iraqi, and Palestinian. We're the lowest, in number-wise. And when I walk up to any of these Lebanese and Yemeni brothers and sisters, especially, and Iraqis, when I walk up to them and I say to them, thanks for coming to our rally. Thanks for coming to support Palestine. Do you know what they say to me? In Arabic, they say to me, wajib alina. And no, this is our duty. And because this is how we were raised, man. We were raised. Even if when we're raised later on in life and we say, oh, you know what? I don't threaten my job or I don't want to threaten. But when you do give them that opportunity to express that, they do it naturally. It's not an act of solidarity. It's an act of this is our issue. So we have to lead the way. And the fact that we've been leading the way is starting to be very effective. This is why, to keep it real, this is why we get really mad when DJ Khaled doesn't say something or doesn't say something strong. If DJ Khaled was black or white, I wouldn't care. But because he's one of us, I don't want him to say it because like, oh, you know, I care what he feels like. I really don't. But I know if he says something, it's gonna make dozens, if not hundreds, if not thousands, if not millions of other people say something too, because he's one of us. So we need to lead the way. It's very, very effective. But you know what? Even without him, it's working. What we're doing is working. So I just encourage people to keep doing it. Keep going out to rallies. Keep post a little something about Palestine every day. Even if it's like, oh, I went out to go eat falafel today. That's my favorite Palestinian dish. Hashtag free Palestine. Or you want to post a news article about something political, whatever, but just a little something every day to remind people that these are people fighting for freedom and equality. And if we keep with that message, we're going to free Palestine way sooner rather than later.
So you're feeling optimistic with this energy?
Very, very optimistic.
Is it looking a lot better than it has been before I'll let you explain.
Yeah, I mean, look, in numbers it's different, but just, I don't know, sometimes you just feel something is different, you know, and I've been through a lot of these moments where I just know that, okay, people are going to be riled up for a little bit and then just next week they're going to go back and do to their normal life. This feels different. This feels different that we're seeing it. And most importantly, we're feeling different from back home. So imagine the day after the ceasefire, they're holding huge rallies in Jerusalem, okay? The day after, you would think of a ceasefire. Okay, everybody go home, ceasefire, let's all chill and go back to normal. The Palestinians are finally saying, no, there is no back to normal anymore. No, we're not just going back to the status quo of occupation and everybody behaves and just moves along with their life. We're not doing that anymore. So they're holding huge rallies. And Palestinians then around the world start responding, and then other Arabs start responding, and then other people start responding, and it mushrooms into this amazing thing. And so I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. And between me and you, I'm not going to stop. That 10,000 person rally last Sunday here in Dearborn, that was just the beginning. I'm going to go down to Comerica Park, find a way to rent out that place and fill that with 40,000 Palestinians and their supporters and Arabs and our supporters waving flags and hold a rally in one of the biggest stadiums in this area and say, we belong here like anyone else, and we're going to make our voices heard. And can you imagine the imagery of that when people see that and then see 40,000 people roll out of that stadium and start marching through the streets of Detroit? That's what we're going to do. And we're going to make sure everyone hears our voice until Palestine is free.
That's amazing, bro.
I'm going to do it.
That's amazing, brother.
It's going to happen.
I know. I'm feeling it too, man.
Yeah, it's different.
Let me ask you something real quick. Didn't you say you were going to make some type of phone call or something?
Yeah, but it's okay. We canceled it. But we're not canceled it. I'm going to do it another day. But it was actually a phone call to, there's Instagram Live that was happening in Palestine for raising money for just fixing some of the humanitarian implications of what happened with Gaza these last few weeks. Let me see if they're actually on. But I was going to call them up, and then then they said to me, it's okay, we can do it another day since you're on a live, or since I'm doing this. Mm. But yeah, all these Palestinians are taking action everywhere. And, you know, it's important that we stay and show solidarity with all these people. Very, very important. And it's working. It's working. That's the most important part.
Should we watch this interview that you had?
Sure. Yeah, let's watch that, and then we'll wrap up a little bit after that.
All right, cool. You trying to run my podcast, motherfucker?
I mean, I just got to go. You know, I got to go. It's already going to take 45 minutes to say goodbye. We're Arabs, so I'm just trying to get ahead of that.
All right, let's watch this.
Joined by Ahmed Zahar. He's a professor of law and a comedian and also an activist. Welcome to the program. Ahmed,
thank you for having me.
President Biden has expressed support for a ceasefire. Why has this taken so long?
Well, it's empty words, right? I mean, at the UN Security Council, the United States has vetoed attempts at a ceasefire and vetoed attempts at resolutions that might tamp down the tensions. Look, the Biden administration is 100% Zionist, 100% behind Israel. He expressed unwavering support for Israel. He said that they were not overreacting, and now he's approved $735 million in weapons. That's only the last 7 days. So I am not very optimistic about him saying he wants a ceasefire at all.
And could that change at all, given that very vocal opposition in the Democrat Party? Could that bear pressure at all?
Well, one of the problems with Biden as president is that, you know, when Trump was president, it was basically the same policies, and you had a lot more opposition in the Democratic Party because it was Trump. One of the problems with Biden is that the opposition Democratic Party against Israel has actually weakened under Biden, while the allegiance to Israel and the Republican Party has stayed the same. So I am optimistic that there's more voices coming out. I'm much more optimistic about the popular demonstrations that have happened throughout America and throughout the world. Tens of thousands of people in many different cities coming out, and we've seen a real change on the ground in the way the American public views Palestine. And so that is going to be a political reality that the Biden administration is going to deal with one day. The problem is he's not been open to that, not now or in the past. He is ideologically a Zionist. He has said, I'm a Zionist. He has said if there's not an Israel, we'd have to invent one. This is the kind of problem that we're dealing with in the White House.
And that is a very famous line of his. Tell us, what's it like as a Palestinian-American watching this new president who said that he would put human rights at the center of his work and not reacting strongly to Israel's aggression and just seeing, you know, how many children have been killed now by Israel?
You know, Palestinians over the years, we express a lot of emotions, frustration, rage, anger, sadness, but usually don't see us express shock. And I'm not expressing shock about Joe Biden either. When Joe Biden was running for president, I worked with Bernie Sanders. I supported Bernie Sanders. But when it was Biden against Trump, I kind of came out famously and said that Biden is like, you know, pork is forbidden in Islam, but if you're in the middle of the desert and there's nothing else and you're dying of hunger, you're allowed to eat a ham sandwich. So Biden was that ham sandwich that we were allowed to eat when Trump was president. But don't forget, he's still a ham sandwich. So when you're not hungry again, you have to remember he's still forbidden. Biden is who he is. And so it's very frustrating to see this, but not surprising. You know, as Palestinians, we've been dealing with this for 73 years. They thought the old would die and the young would forget, where many of the old ones are still telling stories, and many of the young ones, 3, 4, 5 years old, will tell you the name of the village that their grandparents got kicked out of. So I am optimistic about my people, even though we are operating in the face of a very hostile administration.
Thank you so much. It's been really great to get your thoughts.
Yep.
Facts.
You like that ham sandwich?
Of course.
Yeah.
I think you've done that before.
Yeah, I made a video about that last November when
That's
I
right.
when I said to people, look, you know, I guess we'll vote for Biden, But just remember, he's a ham sandwich. But I'm not positive I was right about that. I mean, there's no question to me, and I always said, Trump would have been better for us on Palestine than Biden, because they have basically the same policy, substantively. I mean, Trump is louder and more obnoxious about it.
Fuck is he.
But on the ground, it's basically the same policy. And so there's the same policy, but when Trump does it, you can get a lot more Democrats to say, that's wrong, okay? And the Republicans all stand with Israel. But when Biden does it, you get much less Democrats say, that's wrong,
and
the Republicans still stand with Israel.
Bro, that's everything, bro, that I'm fucking pissed off at about my liberal friends or liberals in general is that that goes back to saying they only want to fight for what's cool.
Right.
It's not cool to criticize your president.
Right. Right. Even though he's doing the same shit the previous guy was doing.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the one thing I kind of liked about Trump is that everyone was sort of paying attention.
Yeah, but I mean, look, Trump was, there were just certain things that were not, you know, that you just couldn't.
Listen, he was a piece of shit. He's a piece of shit.
Racist. You know, he's racist.
Piece of shit, racist.
You know, you just can't allow that. And, but
just there was dividing people, yeah, not there, uniting us.
Yeah. And there was a reason we were working so hard for Bernie. But, you know, when it came down to Biden and Trump, it was like back to the whole lesser of two evils. And the only way I could think of it was like a ham sandwich. I'm not that religious, but I mean, for people who are that, it, you know, the point of this thing, to say it again, is that pork is forbidden in Islam, but nothing's absolute. So if you're starving in the middle of the desert, you're allowed to have a ham sandwich if that's all that's there to satisfy your hunger so you don't die.
Right.
But when you're not hungry anymore, it's still a ham sandwich that you're not allowed to eat. So Biden is still a ham sandwich. Okay, we're not hungry anymore. Trump's gone. So we have to understand that Biden is a ham sandwich, you know, and he is who he is. Unfortunately, people are still partying, and there's some Arab American sort of like political activist gatekeepers who think that they're the ones that talk to Biden and all this kind of stuff. They can miss me with that stuff.
Explain that to me.
Well, you know, there's a lot of Arab Americans in the Democratic Party who want to say, well, if you really want to get something done with the Biden administration, you know, use me and just tone it down out there on the streets a little bit, because, you know, we really need to talk to this guy, and they just want to preserve their own access and their own job. I don't give a fuck about that. I could care less about that. I'm not here about Democrat, Republican. I'm not here for any of that kind of stuff. I believe in politics. I believe in electoral politics. Obviously, I work on campaigns. I'm not an anarchist, but I'm going to go to who's best for our people. If that's somebody with an R next to their name or a D next to their name, I don't really give a fuck. But we have a two-party system, and we got to deal with that for the time being. But, you know, they've said before, the only thing worse than a one-party system is a two-party system.
Yeah.
Most civilized countries in the world have like six, seven, eight parties that are feasible and viable. Here we have two, and, you know, 90%, they're 90% of shit, they're similar. And all we hear about is the 10% that they're different on, they fight about. But on 90% of shit, they're similar. Neither of them want us to have universal health care. Neither of them want us to have universal college tuition. All these corporate interests control everything. You know, so, and they're both controlled by Israel. I mean, Biden has said before, I'm a Zionist. Like, that's a crazy thing for a president to say. He has said before, if there was not an Israel, we'd have to invent one. I mean, how ridiculous. But this is his ideology. He's a ham sandwich.
Is it his ideology, or is it just that's the tune he has to dance to?
Well, okay, but now he's president. I mean, and he's still saying that shit. You know, when he was vice president, he was still saying that shit. And he's 80. He doesn't have to appease anyone anymore. So you have to believe that this is what he believes.
Mm.
And, you know, and this is how he's doing stuff. He is a ham sandwich. He's a ham sandwich. And you just got to, like, understand that. If you understand it's a ham sandwich, then you say, okay, I can't eat that. I got to deal with it. It's here in my midst, but I can't eat it unless I'm starving. That's it.
You got to get going.
Yeah, I got to get going in a minute, man. Plus, you know, people are going to get tired of us after a while. You always got to keep go out on top, man. You got to keep it fresh.
Yeah, I guess, man. Sometimes I get really into discussions with people. And we just go and go and go. Yeah. That's why, like, somebody, one of the guys that can watch us often, he just commented, oh, I missed the first hour of three, is what he says. And I'm just
that's the expectations?
Nah, dude, not this podcast, man. You fucked up, Jason. You fucked up, bro. You fucked up. What that Facebook video you sent me.
I think I sent you the Siri one. The same.
Can we watch that?
We can, yeah. It's the same thing I did on my phone, yeah.
Is this something to probably good to...
If put it on the screen, though. It'd be good to put it on the screen.
Yeah, I'm saying, but we can end on this, possibly?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Hold on. Share screen. Bam. I'm always fucking worried when I share my screen that, like, oh, I'm going to have a dick pic up there or some shit. It's the weed. Paranoid.
Hey, everybody. It's Amr Zahir. That's Amr Zahir for white people. As I think I always make clear, I'm Palestinian. Like, really Palestinian. I've tried to tell everybody what the real problem is in Palestine. They stole our land. And I always talk about the most famous Palestinian of all time. Jesus. Yes, I know he was Jewish too. You can be Jewish and Palestinian at the same time. It's possible, okay? Calm down. But being Palestinian also means something else. A lot of times, we just don't exist. I learned this from Siri. Hey Siri.
Hi there.
What time is it in New York City?
It's 2:17 a.m. in New York, New York.
What time is it in Tokyo, Japan?
It's 3:17 p.m. in Tokyo, Japan.
What time is it in Ramallah?
Sorry. I don't know what time it is in Ramallah.
Maybe that was a mistake. What time is it in Ramallah, Palestine?
I have no idea what time it is in Ramallah. Sorry about that.
Okay, maybe Ramallah's too small. You know, 2 million people live in Gaza, the most densely populated place on planet Earth. Let's try that. Siri, what time is it in Gaza?
Sorry, I don't know what time it is in Gaza.
Mother f***. You know what? Maybe it's because it's in English. Marhaba, Siri.
Ahlan.
Kam الساعة في فلسطين?
للأسف. ما هو الوقت هناك؟
كم الساعة في القدس عاصمة فلسطين؟
الوقت في القدس إسرائيل هو التاسعة
القدس إسرائيل
So Siri is obviously a traitor. But you know what? It doesn't matter what Siri says. We are everywhere in the world. We are proud, we are loud, and we're not going anywhere.
Yeah!
I told Siri, يلعن أبوك, which means curse your dad. He goes, I don't answer that. Yeah. But yeah, man, we got to just keep it strong, keep it loud, keep it proud. And most importantly, to everyone watching and to you, Mike, let's keep doing it because it's working. It's working. It's working. It's working. Let's keep doing it.
It definitely seems to be working, brother. And yeah. I'm so glad that I was able to have you on. Thanks, and this has been a fucking great podcast, man. Yeah, that's this is the shortest podcast I've done.
That's good. Sometimes the shorter the better.
No, I'm trying to get it to be more short, to be honest. Sometimes I just get into the weeds, and then I look and still eight people are still watching. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? How the hell do you guys? Anyways, but this has been great. Everyone, please fucking follow.
Thank you, yes.
Follow Amr.
I got to get one of those.
He's, yeah, you fucking narcissist. You fucking love that. Like, once you get rich and you can automate your house, I bet you every room you walk into, you just hear applause.
Yeah, just motion activated. Yeah.
Everywhere. So you just feel good about yourself.
That's right. Strobe lights.
Tariq says, thank you, gents. Yeah. Somebody asks, hey, do you think Jews aren't indigenous to the land?
Okay, good question. Let's end on this stupid question. Although I'm sure
it might not be stupid. Sorry, it might be, come on.
I don't
man.
Know if they're trying to trigger me. Sorry. Sorry.
You gotta be.
Of course
nice.
They are. Listen, of course Jews have a connection to Palestine. Of course.
There are Palestinian Jews.
There are Palestinian Jews, and there's the Bible, and of course Jews have a connection to Palestine. That's not the question. That's not the question. That's why this question, I don't like it, because it's a trap question. This is not the question. The question is, do they have a claim that they can use to say, we belong here and no one else belongs here and gives us the right to kick people out and take their land and not let them come back? That's all that matters. Of course Jews have a claim to Palestine. Jews were there, Greeks were there, Romans were there, Byzantines were there, Arabs were there, Crusaders came for a couple years. That's why Palestinians look like everything.
That's why
Palestinians look like everything.
Yeah.
Oh, our ancestry thing would be totally fucked up if you look at it. Yeah. But, you know, I always say this, Mike. Everybody came to Palestine and everybody came in Palestine, okay? So we look like a lot of shit, okay? But so what? So what? These people are indigenous that have been there. We know Palestinians, but we know the Arab claim to Palestine has been for 1,400 years. But you know what? It's not a competition. All we're saying is that you don't kick people out of their house and tell them they can't go. If you're going to base this on some promise from God, well, then I guess we don't have that much to talk about. Okay?
Right.
You know. But if you're going to base it on sort of humanity, of course people have a claim to Palestine. But I mean, imagine, right? Imagine there was an African-American movement. Blacks have been in America for now for 400, 500 years, just like Jews were in Europe for a really long time. Imagine if there was a movement in African America today, a group of people that say, you know what, we're being treated bad over here, and that's all true. So we're going to go back to where we're from. And so we're going to go to Burkina Faso. And we're going to
Burkina Faso.
And so we're going to go to Burkina Faso because we're African. So we're going to go back to Burkina Faso and live there. And by the way, the Burkina Fasans, I don't know if that's their name, the Burkina Fasans that are there now, they all got to get the fuck out. And we're going to ethnically cleanse them and kick them out and say, you know what? They don't get to be here anymore because we have a connection to that land. And you know what? They do have a connection to that. But does that mean you get to kick out
exactly.
some other people who also have a connection to that? That's all that matters.
That's the fucked up. That's a very good way of putting it, Amir.
It's all that matters. Nothing else
See, that's
matters.
Why I love you, man, because you're so measured. I
appreciate that.
You really are, though, man. You are. You're taking so many things into account. You know, like,
yeah,
you're
but
not-
then you got to focus on, like, what is the thing here? Like, Zionism doesn't say Jews should be able to live safely in Palestine. Zionism says Palestine is a Jewish only land. Everybody else got to go. And then it does things to try to make that happen. That's the problem. Jews coming to Palestine is not a problem. There's been a Jewish presence in Palestine. They never left. There's always been a Jewish presence in Palestine. Yeah, sorry. There's been a Jewish presence in Palestine. They never left. The question is, is your ideology, are you going to have an ideology that says we get to kick everybody else out? That's all that matters. And we're saying no to that. That's all. So are Jews indigenous? Oh, sure they are. But they're not the only indigenous people. And they're not, and they don't have a claim that trumps all other claims and says we kick people out. That's the Palestinian position.
Do Ashkenazi Jews have a claim?
I mean, you know, people have gotten into things like, are Ashkenazi Jews, did they really originate from the people, from the Jews of Israel that got kicked out by the Romans 2,000 years ago? Let's just assume that they did. Maybe they didn't. I don't know. But let's just assume that they did. Even if they did. It still doesn't justify in modern times kicking somebody out.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Why I use the African-American thing. Nobody can deny that every African-American here in America has a connection to Africa. Every single one of them, right? They were all brought here in chains against their will from Africa. So they all have a connection to Africa. So if some of them got together and said, you know what? We want Burkina Faso. And the white people said...
Burkina Faso, bro. And the white fucking love Burkina Faso,
let's go do a show there. And the white...
I am Burkina Faso, bro.
Hashtag.
I'm going to change my name.
And by the way, imagine if, by the way, you know who would really support that that Burkina Faso liberation movement of African Americans? White racists. They would love that, right? Yeah, get the fuck out of here. Go ahead. Go to Burkina Faso. Just like white nationalists in Europe and America said to the Zionists, don't come here. Go ahead. Yeah, go over there. We don't want you to come here. Of course, this shit is not complicated, man. People try to complicate it. It's not that complicated. They kick us out. They steal our land. They don't let us come back. It's really simple. That's why we're mad. My four grandparents who were born in Palestine are buried in different places. That's it. It's really simple. You go to a Black Lives Matter rally. You see Palestinian flags. You go to a Trump rally. You see Israeli flags. This shit is not complicated, okay? You go to our marches. We are saying free, free Palestine. You go to their marches in Jerusalem. You know what they're saying? Death to Arabs. This is not complicated. You don't need to go back 2,000 years. It's not complicated. Love you, man.
Love you too, bro. Yeah. You are fucking shit, man. Fuck. Man, I wish we could do this for 5 hours, bro. Like, out of all the 3-hour podcasts I did, at the end of it, I was like, this is a fucking mistake. I end those podcasts. I'm like, I could have ended that 1.5 hours sooner. This is the one I want to go till tomorrow, bro.
It's okay. I think we gave people enough food for thought. And here's the deal. We'll do another one, man.
We will do another one. We'll do bro. Another one. I love you.
Listen, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you.
Everything, I'm proud of you, bro.
I'm proud of you. Ever since the whole Arab American community got to know Mike when they made that Cribs video, you and Bulldog, what's that? 10, 15 years ago now? Whenever that
something
was.
Something like 10 years ago.
Yeah. But since then, you've been staying involved and doing stuff and letting people know what you're, and I'm just really proud of you for keeping an Arab voice alive and never shying away from your culture. It would have been easy to. You and I have both met a lot of people in Hollywood and LA that all of a sudden they're just pretend like they're white when they get to Hollywood.
Yeah.
And you never did that. And I love you for that, man.
Thank you, man. Yeah. Thank you, brother. I love you and I love everything you do, bro.
Thanks, bro.
Like I said, man, you know, anytime anyone ever asked me anything about Palestine, I wish we were like in Star Wars where I could bring you up in a hologram from my watch.
That's right.
And then you fucking break it down to them because I'm not equipped to like talk. Like even the way you just explained this last thing, man, about, yeah, how Jews do have a claim.
Of course.
And no, but see, that's the beautiful thing about understanding all the intricacies and the moving parts of this very complicated thing. And we need people like you.
I'm here.
And I'm now Burkina Faso. That's my fucking name right now. Follow me at Mike from Burkina Faso. Yeah, guys, I'm Mike from Detroit on everything, even on TikTok. I'm starting to like try to post some stuff out there. Follow Amir Zahar. He's definitely somebody you want to follow. Follow him on Facebook. He's already got 200,000 people following him. This guy is an activist and a hilarious comedian, and he's making good things happen. Show him some love. I love you, bro.
Love you, bro.
All right, man. Thank you.
See you.
Public Yemeni number one.